Sarah Spain, Mina Kimes, and making her Around the Horn debut, Elle Duncan, star of stage and screen. You've seen her on SportsCenter. I just want to say, I want to hear your life story in 5 seconds or
all
less.
Right. I was sent to the principal's office every year for talking too much, so you've been warned.
Well, that's exactly what we do here with the mute button. I think you've got some practice here. Elle Duncan, the takeover is real. I, for one, welcome my Duncan overlord. That is our big story of the day, but now we have the news of the day, and we go to the track. The noose in the garage of Bubba Wallace. Today's Talladega race still ongoing through our tape time. The way it began, with racers and crew members pushing Wallace's car to the front of the field, certainly was visually stunning. Wallace's, for the first time in some time, the owner of his car, he said he did it to stand in solidarity with Bubba Wallace. But the race is not the story. NASCAR's statement, angry, outraged, heinous act, and they will do anything and everything to eliminate the person or persons responsible from the sport, is. And that's one of the things that this is about, right? Access to the garage at Talladega, this is way inside. And for a sport that applauded itself and was applauded rightfully last week for banning Confederate flags in 2020, and Bubba Wallace being the lone black driver on the circuit, well, I have to wonder, are we talking about NASCAR survival here? Elle Duncan, first to you, your thoughts on the discovery of the noose and what it means and what's riding on NASCAR's
investigation? Yeah, I mean, I wasn't particularly surprised to hear about the news, and not because it's NASCAR. I believe that's low-hanging fruit to just go, well, obviously, like a lot of people have said. I wasn't surprised because, to your point, Tony, it was absolutely an inside job. Like, unless we're talking about some James Bond version of David Dukes who was able to find his way with espionage into the garage, it was likely someone that Bubba Wallace has had interaction with or knows, or at least is in his sphere or in his cycle or circle, rather. And I think that's the cruelest part of racism, that people can smile in your face and shake your hand and work around you or under you or over you, but underneath still believe that you should be on the bad end of a noose. I think as far as what's riding on this investigation, I mean, outside of the obvious that this is disgusting, that this is a terrorist act, that this is psychological warfare, not a whole lot, Tony. Honestly, I don't. I mean, you're talking about a sport that has so much deconstructing of their reputation to do. And I understand that their eagerness and their earnest. I believe Marty Smith and Ryan McGee when they say that NASCAR wants to make the changes to be a more inclusive environment. But you're talking about a place that just in the last couple of months had to deal with Kyle Larson calling someone the N-word on a virtual race. And of course, just yesterday alone, with the flag being flown, the Confederate flag from the crop duster. And then after that, the noose in the stall. But if you just go back a few years, you're talking about Richard Petty, who stands in solidarity with Bubba Wallace today, but just 3 years ago said that anybody who kneels would be fired. They'd be subject to not work for him anymore, should get out of the country. As far as I know, he hasn't walked any of that back. So there's certainly some great gestures that NASCAR is starting to make, but you're talking about a sport that is associated with the South that for many years has a reputation of being parochial, that just a few months ago had Donald Trump as their grand marshal. And for those that say, well, plenty of presidents have been grand marshals at NASCAR, correct. George Bush in 2004, Ronald Reagan in 1984. You do the math on what the connection is between all of them. I don't believe Barack Obama was ever there, but I know First Lady Obama certainly was and was booed in the stands when she went. So they can do whatever they want and say whatever they want and offer as many gestures, and they'll find this person. I have no doubt that they will, but their reputation, their well-earned reputation, has a lot to go.
Elle, if I were to ask point blank, is NASCAR survival riding on this?
No, I don't think so at all. No, I don't think that it...
Okay. And now we bring in Sarah Spain as well. Your thoughts on the noose in the garage and this investigation?
Well, Elle just said so much so well. I'll just add on that she mentioned that Confederate flag flying over the race, which I guess we probably could have anticipated. There's always a sort of one step forward, two steps backlash sort of reaction. But that would probably be the lead story, even if we didn't have the noose, which is a hate crime and now a Department of Justice matter. So we've doubled up on the reaction to something that everyone was lauding the sport for doing. I also agree with her. I don't think that the sport's future is riding on this. There is far too much support for this sort of thing, or at least sort of apathy for it within that sport for it to immediately die. But I do think this is a pivot point for anyone who supports and loves NASCAR and doesn't want it associated with this. The fact that so many of us could look at this moment and sort of shrug and say, fairly or not, I'm not surprised, tells you how ingrained this is within the sport. And so for those who want to defend it, get with your people and have some conversations, because there are way too many of them showing up in the mentions on social media saying, you know, when they got rid of the Confederate flag, that they were insulting their own fan base or that they were killing the sport. If all of those people are still out there defending the Confederate flag or accusing Bubba Wallace and his crew of placing the noose there themselves to get attention, those people are still going to make up a sport unless you speak out against it.
That is something you hear. It is so insidious. You hear that all the time. You heard that with LeBron James. Because, hello, this is not just NASCAR. It's happened everywhere, right? You heard that with LeBron James with the N-word graffitied onto his wall at his home years ago. Well, we never really saw a photo of it. Maybe this is just all a setup. I mean, for that to even be involved here, let me bring Mina Kimes here, on the noose being found in the garage, and also what you saw from NASCAR today as the race began and this impending investigation.
I agree with Elle and Sarah that the survival of the sport doesn't depend on how this moment is handled, but growth of it certainly rides on it, right? I mean, the sport's never going to grow unless they deal with this. They're never going to have a future, but Elle is absolutely correct in laying out the many, many ways in which they still have to reckon with their past. When people do things like this, such a racist, brazenly awful, hateful act, that's because they felt comfortable acting this way. Maybe not as overtly, but acting this way in the past. They feel threatened now because that comfort is being threatened when someone like Bubba comes out and has the courage to stand up to the Confederate flag. A flag that was only banned weeks ago. I cannot stress that enough. This just happened. And it's great that the sport is taking this seriously, and it is heartening to see his fellow drivers standing with him. But there is still so much work to be done because of everything that has happened up until this moment.
Yeah. I mean, I hear everything you guys are saying. But if you have a sport, I for one was shocked they were still running the race today. This is a threat against one of your drivers. Who's to say, okay, a noose was in his garage, that that person would have tinkered with the car in some sort of way? Because we've already established, well, this isn't just some random person. This is somebody in the garage. Not to mention, there's got to be cameras all over the place in the garage. For me to hear from NASCAR, we're not running a race, this race, until we get to the bottom of this right now. And we can do that immediately. That's what I'm talking about, the survival of the race. When you can't, the safety of one of your drivers is in play here, and that has to be paramount. Elle, you said something right as we sat down today, talking about your father, a big NASCAR fan as well. Can you please explain?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, to your point, Tony, they're running that race because that's what black people do. We are faced with these sort of atrocities and injustices, and then we are expected to just go on and carry on. Had a ton of Tory Hunter feel after he had, you know, guns drawn on him in front of his own house after he was racially profiled and then had to go stand there and face a major league pitcher? Or what does it feel like when you're P.K. Subban playing in Boston and they're calling you the N-word and you have to perform at the highest level? But my father, who is a lifelong NASCAR fan and someone that I have implored, let me send you to a race. Like, let me use what little bit of clout or cachet I have to send you to a race and see it in person, since you just stand here in the kitchen and watch it all the time. And I asked him what it would take for NASCAR to be as inclusive as they hope to be, that he'd feel comfortable going to a race. And he said they'd have to hold most of them in California and acknowledge that, yes, the Confederate flag will follow them to Cali as well. But his point was, is that there is so much past here. There is so many examples here of why this was a sport that was parochial, where they catered and kowtowed to a particular crowd. And he said, they can't get to Bubba Wallace, but they can get to me. And that anger and that ire over that flag, they'll take it out on me. And I don't want to have any stain on this sport that I love so much by actually having the audacity as a black man to sit there in those stands and feel the hate and anger from the crowd, who may not be sporting Confederate flags, but still feel exactly the same thing that those flags represent.
Wow. Thank you for saying that, Elle. I mean, wow. I don't think anyone's ever started their around-the-horn career like Elle Duncan just did, and you have 0 points to show for it, because we can't score arguments in 2020. Get this year out of here. We're taking a break, right? When we come back, we will score. Dak Prescott and the latest from MLB. Back in 2 minutes.
Around the Horn is presented by Corona Extra. Find your beach. Part of Happy Hour.
NFL news of the day. Dak Prescott and the franchise tag. It means 1 year, $31.4 million. Prescott and the Cowboys have until July 15th to negotiate long-term. Which, if you've been monitoring this a little bit, it appears these two sides have proven they love talking about negotiating. So this is sweet. We got another month of this. Mina Kimes, we'll start with you. Who gets the better end of this franchise tag? And then, what are the odds in the next month? Maybe, who knows? They have her at a deal long term.
Well, this is obviously good for Dallas because it means he's going to play, though I believe he was always going to play because even if he didn't sign the tag, there would be no reason for him to hold out after July 15th. They can't negotiate a long-term deal. It would have to be a Le'Veon situation where he'd want to be traded or do it out of spite. Doesn't really make sense. I think the bigger news this weekend was Jamal Adams, the Jets safety, coming out and saying he wants to play for Dallas, because if Dallas wants him, that's a reason to get a deal done, because financially otherwise they can't make it work.
Oh, yes. Okay. So the financials of being able to acquire Jamal Adams suggest they have to sign Dak long term?
Yeah, if he plays on the tag at $31 million, I don't see financially how they could make it work. I don't think they should do it anyways, to be clear, but they would have to get a deal done.
Sarah Spain?
Yeah, I mean, I think short-term, Mina's right. Obviously, it helps the Cowboys for him to be willing to play, but I don't think anyone doubted that, especially with the pandemic and other teams already secure a quarterback. It wasn't going to be a big market available to pay him what he wants to play for. But long-term, this absolutely helps Dak because of that pandemic and the way it might affect crashing caps next year. If they don't make a long-term deal now and if they enter into next season with questions about that, then they won't be able to manipulate his financials if he gets franchised again and he's at $38 million almost. Between him and Amari Cooper, that'd be $50 million of their cap for just two players. So they clearly need to figure out if they're going to let him go or if they're going to make a deal that they can then massage the financials of and not be hit so hard.
I actually agree with Sarah in terms of the cap being at play here, but I disagree in that I think the leverage is on the Cowboys' side because we've seen Dak sort of already do some calculated risks and some gambling to try to get that money. It looked like it was going well for him at the beginning of last season, not so much towards the end. I think that they'll be able to look at Dak and say, are you sure with a season that we don't know if it will happen, how long it will happen, are you sure you want to gamble away $35 million for what could be markedly less next year?
My last question would be, is this a well-constructed team if it's constructed as is with Dak Prescott? And I have no idea. I mean, who knows, Dak, with your quarterback as the franchise? Look at Duncan, a veteran maneuver, passing in the right lane, passing Spade in the last seconds there. Sarah, I have to eliminate somebody here. It's going to be you. Smile for the camera. Don't go too far. Front row seat for Mina Kimes, L. Duncan. Showdown.
Around the Horn is presented by Corona Extra. Find your beach. Part of Happy Hour.
Check out this campaign from five-time WNBA All-Star Angel McCautry to petition the league to allow names of black men and women killed and taken by police brutality on the backs of jerseys. That's what that could look like. Two-time champion Renee Montgomery just told the Atlanta Dream she's taking the season off to focus on social justice, just as Maya Moore and Imani McGee Stafford did before her. Two-time All-Star Jonquel Jones of the Connecticut Sun will sit out because of concerns over health and COVID. And in the NBA, David Bertans of the Wizards doing the same.
No, because the men have concerns too on the NBA side. Only the women are going to have to do it for considerable less money and less fanfare. They've found their purpose and they've found their passion and they're going to pursue it.
Mina Kimes?
I'm not surprised either. The WNBA has long led the way on social justice. These are huge stars making these decisions. And as far as COVID goes, there's this presumption that all athletes are young and healthy and they'll be fine. That's not the case. And I think more and more are going to wake up to that.
NCAA sports are dealing with that as well. But that is a very good point you made, Mina Kimes, about these are stars. Five-time All-Star, two-time All-Star. I mean, these are enormous players in the WNBA making a stand like this. That's very heartening. And I said that was a good point. But how could I not give L. Duncan the win in today's show? I think it was the most dominating 3-point performance in the entire history of Around the Horn. 30 seconds of FaceTime.
Like to say shout out to all those that posted the girl dad hashtag yesterday and added me. But I would just implore you to do one thing. Take that same enthusiasm for your love for your daughters and use it in other places like boardrooms and boys clubs, pretty much anywhere where there are more Y chromosomes than X's, because you can't be a good girl dad without being an advocate for women.
There it is, Elle Duncan, in her first career performance, her first career win, and I'm sure your dad, and also your Uncle Phil,
very
happy about that. You finally arrived, Elle. Don't be a stranger.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.